We are celebrating the Bard's birthday. And how are we going to do it? I am with Julie Butters, my fellow Bardolator. Yes, it is an actual term for those of us who idolize the Bard of Avon, commonly known as William Shakespeare. Julie is a local actress and writer and Bardolator, and she will share several poems written by poets about Shakespeare and his characters, including several of her own poems. Many people consider Shakespeare to be the best writer to have ever lived, yet his personal life remains mostly a mystery. In the 1916 poem, To Shakespeare, After 300 Years, English writer Thomas Hardy muses on how little we know about the bard. He also contrasts the relative fleetness of Shakespeare's life with his immense and long-standing impact on the world. To Shakespeare, After 300 Years, by Thomas Hardy.
Bright, baffling soul, least capturable of themes, thou who displayedst a life of commonplace, leaving no intimate word or personal trace of high design outside the artistry of thy penned dreams, still shalt remain at heart unread eternally. Through human orbits, thy discourse today, despite thy formal pilgrimage, throbs on in harmonies that cow oblivion, and, like the wind, with all uncared effect, maintain a sway not for desired, in tracks unchosen and unchecked. And yet, at thy last breath, with mindless note, the borough clocks but samely tongued the hour, the Avon just as always glassed the tower. Thy age was published on thy passing bell, but in due wrote, with other dwellers' deaths, accorded a like knell. And at the strokes some townsmen, met, maybe, and thereon queried, by some squire's good dame driving in shopward, may have given thy name with, yes, a worthy man and well-to-do, though, as for me, I knew him but by just a neighbor's nod, 'tis true. In faith, few knew him much here, save by word, he having elsewhere led his busier life, though, to be sure, he left with us his wife. Ah, one of the tradesmen's sons, I now recall. Witty, I've heard. We did not know him. Well, good day. Death comes to all. So, like a strange bright bird, we sometimes find to mingle with the barn door brood awhile, then vanish from their homely domicile. Into man's poesy, we wot not whence, flew thy strange mind, lodged there a radiant guest, and sped forever thence.
Who, at one time or another, has not quailed at the daunting prospect of reading Shakespeare aloud? Even professionals have found the task difficult. In To Shakespeare, a poem from 1867, actress and writer Frances Anne Kemble describes her anxiety in attempting to do justice to Shakespeare's glorious words. to Shakespeare by Frances Anne Kemble.
Oft, when my lips I open to rehearse thy wondrous spell of wisdom and of power, and that my voice and thy immortal verse on listening ears and hearts I mingled pour, I shrink dismayed, and awful doth appear the vain presumption of my own weak deed. Thy glorious spirit seems to mine so near that suddenly I tremble as I read. Thee, an invisible auditor, I fear. Oh, if it might be so, my master dear, with what beseeching would I pray to thee to make me equal to my noble task? Succor from thee, how humbly would I ask thy worthiest works to utter worthily.
Despite the intimidating nature of Shakespeare's language, actors love to delve into the meaty characters he created. Hamlet is no exception. American poet Carl Sandburg muses on the appeal of playing the tortured Danish prince in his poem, They All Want to Play Hamlet. This is from his 1920 collection, Smoke and Steel. They All Want to Play Hamlet by Carl Sandburg.
They all want to play Hamlet. They have not exactly seen their fathers killed, nor their mothers in a frame-up to kill, nor in Ophelia dying with a dust gagging the heart, not exactly the spinning circles of singing golden spiders, not exactly this have they got at, nor the meaning of flowers. Oh, flowers. Flowers slung by a dancing girl in the saddest play the inkfish Shakespeare ever wrote. Yet they all want to play Hamlet, because it is sad, like all actors are sad, and to stand by an open grave with a joker's skull in the hand, and then to say over slow, and say over slow, wise, keen, beautiful words masking a heart that's breaking, breaking. This is something that calls and calls to their blood. They are acting when they talk about it, and they know it is acting to be particular about it, and yet they all want to play Hamlet.
Shakespeare's characters don't just inspire actors, they inspire other artists too. Ophelia, the young woman whom Hamlet loves and who dies by drowning in the play Hamlet, has been the subject of numerous paintings, novels, and more. Julie Butter's poem Ophelia imagines the character as a young girl in the present day. Ophelia by Julie Butters.
He's just not that into you, her brother says, as she waits for those three dots to manifest on her cell phone screen. He'll take over the family business, and you're just the girl next door. Still, she's gotten too pretty these days. He remembers his own senior year and scans her room for signs of trouble. Underwear with the tag still on, or a pharmacy package discreetly wrapped. There's nothing to find. But where did the teddy bear go she so recently slept with? She blushes and grips the phone tighter, shielding the telltale torrent it contains. the texts at 2 a.m., the sleepy photos of her, clothed, but tousle-haired, with a smile just for him, when he tells her he can't sleep. He's troubled by ghosts, he says. His father's sudden death and his mother's strange remarriage have made him moodier than usual, and the therapist doesn't help. He stays up, going down rabbit holes, lurking on chat boards and entertaining conspiracy theories. And though he begs her not to doubt him, tells her he loves her best, too often she falls asleep with the phone at her side, her latest missive unanswered. On the way to school, her phone buzzes, and she is too quick to smile. "Is that Hamhead again?" asks her father, cheeks puffing up like a balloon. He pauses his affirmations podcast so he can sermonize. "That kid is trouble, trouble, trouble. Like the boy in that Taylor Swift song. Rich boys will toss you aside in a minute for the shiny new thing. We're going to end this now." They sit in the school parking lot, and he watches as she opens each app on her phone. Her thumbs burn with every erasure as she cloisters herself from his love. As of this moment, she is the latest apparition in his collection. Things are quiet for a while after that. He broods, she evades, she gets used to being invisible. Then, one night, he is there at her window, clothes disheveled and hair askew. She looks down, and he gazes up. She feels like a goddess, or the moon, or at least the girl, in a music video. He sighs, filling her ears with promises of sanctity or poison, and she knows it's no good pretending to be dead. When it begins to rain, he finally goes home, but she can't bring herself to shut the window again. She sinks down into her pillow, with its pattern of faded flowers, her tears mingling with the rain. In the morning, when the stars expend their fire and truth, but the sun arises, she doubts not, though she can't say why. There will be so much more drowning before this is done.
Shakespeare has been commemorated in myriad ways around the world, from statues to banknotes to theaters. But as English poet John Milton writes in his poem on Shakespeare in 1630, no man-made monument can equal the legacy of awed readers the bard leaves behind. On Shakespeare by John Milton.
What needs my Shakespeare for his honored bones, the labor of an age in piled stones, or that his hallowed relics should be hid under a starry pointing pyramid? Dear son of memory, great heir of fame, what needest thou such weak witness of thy name? Thou, in our wonder and astonishment, hast built thyself a live-long monument. For whilst to the shame of slow-endeavoring art thy easy numbers flow, and that each heart hath from the leaves of thy unvalued book those Delphic lines with deep impression took, then thou our fancy of it self-bereaving dost make us marble with too much conceiving. and so sepulchred in such pomp dost lie, that kings for such a tomb would wish to die.
Shakespeare may be revered, but he is not uncontroversial. The poem, Sonnet of a Shrew by Julie Butters, tackles one of Shakespeare's most challenging plays. In The Taming of the Shrew, a man named Petruchio subjects his unruly bride, Kate, to a series of trials intended to transform her into a model wife. Scholars and theatergoers have long debated whether the play is overtly sexist, secretly feminist, or something in between. Sonnet of a Shrew is set in a pivotal scene in Act 4. Petruchio and Kate still have not consummated their marriage. They are journeying to Kate's father's house. Although it is daytime, Petruchio exclaims about the brightness of the moon. Kate contradicts him. But when Petruchio refuses to continue the journey, Kate finally plays along. At the end of the play, Kate delivers a lengthy speech praising the virtues and rewards of wifely obedience. "Come, Kate, we'll to bed," Petruchio says, and the couple are presumed to proceed to a happy ending. Why does Kate finally agree to go along with Petruchio? Has her will been broken? Is she merely pretending to submit? Or has she realized that marital submission runs both ways? Sonnet of a Shrew by Julie Butters.
He says it is the moon that shines so bright, though sun doth shine full tilt upon his face. A husband's word, he says, doth make it night. My eye's own truth with his I must replace. I am the horse he caught at fullest speed. I've bucked and bit and strained at every turn. From his hand only would he have me feed. His blinders and his dominance I'll spurn. Yet what if he but mirrors cursed Kate, to prove a shrew and tyrant are the same? It follows then, to find a gentle mate and taste of love, we both must play this game. So, moon it is, or star or comet's tread, tonight I'll tame at last the marriage bed.
It would be negligent to end this episode of Poets on Shakespeare without giving the bard a few words to reflect upon himself. Despite his popularity in his own day, William Shakespeare had no idea he would become the renowned figure he is now. In Sonnet 32, he expresses humility regarding his writing talent and invites the loved one he addresses to overlook any artistic faults while cherishing the affection his words convey. Sonnet 32 by William Shakespeare.
If thou survive my well-contented day, when that churl, death, my bones with dust shall cover, and shalt by fortune once more resurvey these poor rude lines of thy deceased lover, compare them with the bettering of the time. And though they be outstripped by every pen, reserve them for my love, not for their rhyme, exceeded by the height of happier men. Oh, then vouchsafe me but this loving thought. Had my friend's muse grown with this growing age, a dearer birth than this his love had brought, to march in ranks of better equipage. But since he died, and poets better prove, theirs for their style I'll read, his for his love.
Thank you for listening. Stop by again.